Imagine your AI assistant is reading your morning emails to you, right?
Yeah, standard morning routine.
Exactly. But when it gets to a message from your notoriously difficult boss, the AI actually sounds exhausted.
Like it actually feels the dread.
Yes. It lets out this subtle, heavy sigh before even reading the words. We aren't talking about a developer just, tweaking a pitch dial. We are talking about an artificial intelligence actively acting out a scene. So today, our deep dive is looking at exactly how developers are wiring up AI to feel.
Or at least act like it feels.
Exactly. We have this highly technical leaked developer manual in front of us. It's an agent-run book published on March 15th, 2026, and it's titled Dubao TTS Integration Guide: Voice Cloning with Per-Sentence Emotion.
And it is such a fascinating document because it drags us right out of the theoretical realm of AI research. It throws us directly into the gritty, totally undocumented trenches of modern software engineering. I mean, we are looking at a literal step-by-step instruction manual for orchestrating digital performance art.
Okay, let's unpack this, because if you think back just a few years, our interaction with synthetic voices was, well, it was almost comically robotic.
Oh, absolutely.
Like you miss a turn in your car and that flat, synthesized voice chimes in, recalculating. Turn left in 500 feet.
Yeah, you knew instantly you were listening to a machine. There was no illusion.
Not at all.
The old paradigm was basically just audio engineering. Developers were working with these acoustic models that simply mapped a text character to a pre-recorded phonetic sound.
Right, just stringing sounds together.
Exactly. There was zero subtext. There
Yeah.
was no understanding of what the words actually meant in relation to each other. The system didn't know if it was reading a grocery list or like a tragic breakup letter.
It just saw text strings.
Right. It just saw text strings and converted them into audible frequencies.
But the run book we are looking at today focuses on a completely different beast entirely. It's Volsungen's Dubao Seed ICL 2.0.
Yeah, a massive leap forward.
And the barrier to entry for creating these hyper-realistic emotional voices is shockingly low. Like, according to the manual, to clone a human voice on this system, a developer only needs to provide a clean single speaker MP3.
Or WAV file, yeah.
Right. And it only has to be between 10 and 30 seconds long.
Which is wild. I mean, 10 to 30 seconds is barely a voice memo.
Yeah, it's nothing.
But within that tiny window, the neural network extracts a massive amount of data. It basically maps the foundational architecture of the speaker's voice.
So it's looking past just the basic pitch.
Oh, totally. It captures the unique timbre, the resonant frequencies of their vocal cords, their natural cadence. It even picks up on microscopic breathing patterns that make a voice sound fundamentally human.
Wow. And developers have, a lot of options for this kind of voice cloning today. The author of this run book spends a significant amount of time comparing Dubao against another major player in the space.
Minimax Speech 2.8 HD, right?
Yeah, exactly. And looking at the numbers, Dubao seems, well, aggressively positioned to undercut the market. I mean, they offer a massive 20,000 character free tier.
Which is incredibly generous for this tier of tech.
It is. And beyond that free tier, Minimax is about 2.3 times more expensive to run.
What's fascinating here is that while cost is a massive driver in software architecture, the runbook reveals the choice actually comes down to how developers want to direct the AI's performance.
How do you mean?
Well, with Minimax, and really most traditional voice providers, controlling the output is a mechanical process. You get a dashboard with numerical sliders.
Like a literal mixing board.
Basically. If you want the voice to sound more urgent, you might slide the speed up by 15% and increase the pitch by 10%.
So using Minimax is like adjusting the bass and treble dials on your car stereo. You can tweak the final output to sound a little different, but you can't change the underlying performance of the song itself.
That is a perfect way to put it. But Dubao abandons those numerical dials entirely. It lets developers use natural language descriptions to dictate the emotion.
So you're handing a script directly to a voice actor.
Precisely. You give it directorial notes.
Yeah.
And that shift from numeric values to semantic understanding, I mean, it cannot be overstated.
It changes everything.
It really does.
Yeah.
We are asking an algorithm to comprehend the emotional weight of a sentence and then dynamically alter its acoustic output to match that feeling.
I am looking at this pricing discrepancy, though. If Dubao is less than half the price and offers this, semantic directorial control, is there a catch? Why isn't everyone universally switching over?
It comes down to linguistic architecture.
Okay.
Neural networks are trained on vast data sets of human speech, right?
Right.
And the phonetic rules of different languages shape how those networks construct audio. Dubao is fundamentally optimized for the Chinese language. The runbook is completely explicit about this. If a developer is building an application meant to speak English, or really any other Western language, MiniMax is still the superior choice.
Wait, why is that? What makes one language harder for an AI to emotionally map than another?
Well, think about tonal languages versus Germanic languages.
Okay.
The flow of syllables, the places where we naturally pause for breath, the way our pitch rises or falls to indicate a question or, say, express sarcasm.
Right, they're completely different.
Exactly. They're entirely different acoustic landscapes. Dubao's internal architecture is deeply tuned to Chinese speech patterns.
So when it tries to do English?
When it tries to apply its emotional mapping to English, the resulting prosody, the rhythm and intonation, it can sound slightly unnatural, like an actor putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable of a word.
That makes total sense. You need a model trained on the specific cultural and phonetic rhythms of your target audience.
Exactly.
So for developers working within that Chinese language ecosystem, how do they actually wield this tool? Because telling a computer to just be emotional sounds incredibly vague.
It does. But the runbook details a specific field within the API. It's called the context_texts array.
Okay, the context texts array.
Yeah, and this is where developers pass their directorial instructions to the AI. And a really fascinating detail the author points out is that the text placed in this emotional direction field isn't actually billed by the provider.
Wait, really? The stage directions are free?
Totally free. You only pay for the actual spoken text that the end user hears.
That is such a cool detail. But the author also notes a pretty severe limitation here, right?
Yes, the first element rule.
Yeah, the system only processes the very first element in that context text array. Like if a developer tries to pack a sequence of different instructions into multiple array slots, the system just ignores everything after the first one.
Right, it throws it all out. You have exactly one shot to get the prompt right.
Which means the quality of that single prompt dictates the entire performance.
Exactly. And the author highlights a really common mistake developers make when they first start using the system.
What's that?
They'll pass a really simple generic keyword into that array. For example, they might just type the Chinese word for happy.
And the output produces almost no effect, right?
Barely anything. The voice sounds basically flat.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because reading through this, it immediately reminds me of the early days of playing around with image generators.
Oh, like Midjourney.
Exactly like Midjourney. Prompting this voice AI is exactly like prompting an image generator. You don't just type the word dog into a prompt box and expect a masterpiece.
Right, you get a generic, boring clip art dog.
Exactly. To get what you want, you have to type, you know, a golden retriever puppy sleeping on a red velvet couch in warm afternoon sunlight.
You have to give it physical textures.
Right, you have to paint a scene.
And that is exactly what the runbook author instructs developers to do with this voice AI. They literally call it painting a scene with words.
So cool.
To get a noticeable emotional shift, to actually hear a 25 to 65% difference in the audio output, the developer must provide vivid, physical descriptions of the speaker's state.
The runbook provides a specific example of this, right? A highly effective prompt in Chinese.
Yes. The prompt translates to take a deep breath, suppress anger and disappointment, voice trembling slightly.
Okay, let's look at the mechanics of that prompt. By telling the AI to take a deep breath.
The developer is demanding a literal acoustic marker, the sound of air being pulled into the lungs.
Right, and by telling it to suppress anger.
They are asking for a restrained, tight vocal cord simulation rather than just, you know, yelling.
And then voice trembling slightly forces the system to introduce micro fluctuations into the pitch.
Exactly. By providing physical descriptors, the developer gives the neural network the actual scaffolding it needs. It maps abstract emotion to concrete audio frequencies.
The fact that a neural network can read that stage direction and output a cloned voice perfectly executing that microscopic emotional nuance is just wild to me.
It really is a marvel of engineering.
But getting a flawless performance for a single sentence introduces a massive architectural hurdle when we scale this up, right?
Yeah.
Because human speech isn't static.
No, it's constantly shifting.
Exactly. What happens when a character delivers a long monologue? They might start out furiously angry, but by the end of the paragraph, they are whispering in quiet despair.
And this is where the engineering gets incredibly complex. The runbook issues a stark warning about this.
The emotion drift.
Yes. You cannot simply send an entire paragraph of text to the API with a single emotional prompt.
Mm-hmm.
If you do, The system falls victim to this emotion drift phenomenon.
Meaning the first sentence sounds perfectly aligned with your prompt, but as the AI keeps talking, the emotion slowly drains out of the voice.
Right, until it's back to that flat robotic monotone by, like, the fourth sentence.
Why does it do that? Does it just forget?
Basically, yes. The reason this drift happens is tied to how large language models and neural networks process data. They read tokens sequentially.
Okay.
So as the system generates the audio for the first sentence, the emotional prompt you provided is right there at the top of its active memory. It carries a massive amount of algorithmic weight.
But as it moves further down the text,
as it processes new words and syllables, the mathematical influence of that original prompt begins to fade. It essentially forgets to maintain the performance.
Wow. So if the long text inevitably drifts, how does a developer keep the AI in character for a whole paragraph?
The Wren book outlines a solution they call a per-sentence multi-call synthesis approach.
And looking at the workflow for that, it seems like a monumental amount of effort.
It is. It completely changes the architecture of the application.
Mm.
The developer can no longer just pass the text directly to the voice engine. They have to insert a middleman.
What kind of middleman?
First, they use a separate large language model to act as a script supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
This LLM reads the raw text of the paragraph and tags every single sentence with an emotional marker.
Oh, so it's essentially sticking digital post-it notes on every line.
Exactly.
So instead of just, hello there, I didn't see you, the text becomes bracket, happy bracket, hello there, bracket, surprise, bracket, I didn't see you.
Yes, the LLM embeds those tags directly into the text string. Then the developer system has to intercept that tag text, physically slice the paragraph apart into individual sentences, and make a completely separate API request to Dubar for every single line.
Wait, are you serious? So if you have a paragraph with 10 sentences,
your server is firing off 10 distinct requests across the internet.
That is insane. And each one carries the specific, vivid prompt for that exact moment.
Yes, precisely.
But wait, isn't making an entirely separate API call for every single sentence incredibly inefficient? I'm trying to imagine the user experience of this, and it sounds like an absolute nightmare for latency.
It really does sound like it would be.
Right. If I am talking to an AI assistant on my phone, I do not want to sit in 30 seconds of dead air while my device individually compiles 10 separate audio files before it finally replies to me.
And that latency is the immediate concern for any software engineer looking at this pipeline. But the Runbook author specifically addresses this. It's listed under gotcha number 6.
Okay, what did they find?
They found that if you send a large block of text to Dubao all at once, it takes about 14 seconds to process the whole thing and send the audio back.
14 seconds of silence feels like an eternity when you're staring at a screen.
It does. But here is the brilliant part of slicing the text up. When you break that paragraph down into short 5 to 15 character sentences, each individual API call only takes about 2 to 4 seconds to process.
Okay, but 2 to 4 seconds times 10 sentences is still a long time.
Ah, but crucial to this entire strategy.
Yeah.
Those requests don't happen one after the other. The system fires them all off in parallel.
Oh. So all 10 sentences are being generated simultaneously on Volsungjin's servers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And because the first short sentence only takes 2 seconds to generate, the developer's application receives that first piece of audio almost instantly.
And it just starts playing that first sentence out loud to the user immediately, while the rest of the sentences are quietly downloading in the background.
You got it. It is a technique called streaming playback. It creates a perfect illusion of instant response.
That is so clever.
The user hears the voice right away, completely masking the heavy computational lifting happening behind the scenes. And as the subsequent audio files arrive, the developer's system seamlessly glues them together under the hood.
Do you hear the cuts, though?
Not if it's done right.
Yeah.
They often have to use specialized audio stitching software, like FFmpeg, to blend the waveforms at the boundaries. That way the user doesn't hear a tiny click or pop when the tracks switch.
It's a literal magic trick. The listener experiences one continuous, highly emotional, flawlessly acted monologue. But in reality, they are listening to 10 microscopic, separate audio files being stapled together a millisecond before they hit the speaker.
It is an incredibly elegant solution for the end user.
Hmm.
But getting the theory right is one thing. Actually connecting the pipes to make it work is another story entirely.
Right, because it never works perfectly the first time.
Never. The final section of this runbook abandons the high-level architecture completely and dives into the brutal reality of undocumented bugs.
The minefield.
It really is a log of all the hidden traps the author fell into while trying to build this pipeline.
Well, let's look at the trap the author calls the silent killer. This is gotcha number one.
Oh, this one is painful.
It happens right at the beginning when the developer is trying to send those vivid emotional stage directions to the API. There is a specific field called additions where this text goes, but the API demands that this data be formatted as a JSON serialized string.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture to understand why this trips up so many developers, you have to look at how data is normally transmitted. Usually, when an application talks to an API, it sends a cleanly formatted package of data, a standard JSON object. Think of it like handing over a perfectly organized filing cabinet where every piece of information has its own clearly labeled drawer.
But a JSON serialized string throws that organization completely out the window.
Completely.
It's like taking all the files out of those neat drawers, crushing them down into one massively long line of plain text, and handing over a single unformatted document wrapped in quote marks.
It is an incredibly counterintuitive way to format modern API requests. It's usually a leftover artifact from legacy backend architectures that just require flat text for parsing.
But the real issue isn't the formatting itself, right? It's how the API handles mistakes.
Yes, because if a developer builds their request normally, handing over the neat filing cabinet instead of the crushed text string, the API doesn't crash.
Wait, it doesn't?
No, it doesn't throw a red error message saying, hey, format your data correctly. It just silently ignores the additions field entirely and hands you back flat robotic audio.
Oh, that is brutal. Silent failures are the absolute worst.
They are the bane of engineering. The system tells you everything ran perfectly, but the output is fundamentally broken. And this specific failure actually cascades into another major trap regarding gotcha too.
Ah, the model type 4 parameter.
Yes.
This is the literal switch that tells the server to turn on the advanced voice clone 2.0 engine, right?
Exactly. And intuitively, a developer would place that vital switch at the very top of their request, like right in the front of the filing cabinet.
Makes sense.
But the runbook explicitly warns that placing it there does nothing. That critical switch has to be hidden entirely inside that crushed down stringified text block we just talked about.
So if you don't bury it in the string, the cloning engine never even activates.
Nope, you just get the standard older voice model.
So getting the data into the system requires navigating this massive maze of silent failures. But even if a developer succeeds there, the runbook author found another trap waiting on the exact opposite end of the pipeline.
Gotcha four. When the finalized audio data comes back.
Right. When Volsungene servers finish synthesizing the audio, they don't just send a standard response back. They use a format called ndchase.
New line delimited JSON.
And if a developer uses a standard response.json command to read that response, their entire application instantly crashes.
Instantly.
Why? What makes ndjson so dangerous to parse?
Well, a standard data response is a single complete package. The application waits until the entire package arrives, opens it, and reads it.
Right.
But ndjson is a continuous stream of separate individual packages, and each package is separated simply by a line break. A new line.
So it's like trying to swallow a fire hose instead of drinking from a glass.
Precisely. If the application tries to swallow the entire stream at once as a single package, the formatting logic just breaks down and the system crashes.
So what do they have to do?
The developer has to explicitly write custom code to intercept that stream as raw text, look for those physical line breaks, chop the stream into pieces, and parse every single line independently as it arrives.
It is exhausting just thinking about the amount of custom code required just to talk to this ATI.
It really is.
But there's one more massive trap the author highlights, Gotcha 5, and it has to do with the order of operations.
Oh, the digital post-it notes.
Yes. Remember those digital post-it notes we talked about earlier, the LLM tags like bracket, happy bracket, that dictate the mood of each sentence?
Markers, yeah.
The runbook states you must strip those markers out of your text after you parse and synthesize the audio, not before.
It seems like a minor detail, but it fundamentally breaks the pipeline if done backward.
Why would a developer even do it backward?
Well, a developer's instinct is to clean the text up first. They think, you know, I don't want the AI to actually speak the word bracket, happy bracket out loud, so I need to delete those tags before I send the text to the voice engine.
So what does this all mean? It's like baking, right? If you strip the emotion markers before parsing, it's like throwing away the recipe before you start mixing. And that stringified JSON issue from earlier, that's like using salt instead of sugar. It looks exactly the same, the oven doesn't complain at all, but the end result is totally ruined.
That's a great way to look at it. Because when they strip the tags early, the AI receives the raw text, sees no markers, and defaults to a monotone reading. every single sentence gets synthesized with zero emotion.
Wow.
And because the developer knows they requested an emotional voice, they will spend hours blaming the API for a silent failure, when really, the bug's at a logical flaw in their own pipeline's order of operations.
It's fascinating. We often talk about artificial intelligence as this sleek, magical, omnipotent force. But when you look at a runbook like this, you realize that deploying AI into the real world requires navigating incredibly opaque, undocumented quirks.
It is gritty, frustrating work.
Absolutely. We've explored how modern text-to-speech relies on painting vivid physical scenes rather than just tweaking numerical dials. We've uncovered the absolute necessity of building these complex multi-call-per-sentence pipelines just to keep the AI from forgetting its mood halfway through a paragraph.
Mm-hmm. And we've walked through the absolute minefield of ng-tongue crashes and silently failing payloads required to pull it all off. This kind of deep technical analysis completely reframes how we experience the end product, doesn't it? The seamless applications you use every day are built on top of incredibly precarious, highly engineered scaffolding.
They really are. The next time you are interacting with an AI voice, maybe it's a customer service bot, an audiobook narrator, or, you know, an NPC in a video game, and it sounds genuinely overjoyed or perfectly sarcastic or exhausted.
Yeah.
You will know there isn't just a simple text file sitting behind it. There is a highly orchestrated, parallel processed pipeline running under the hood, fed by invisible, vivid emotional prompts held together by digital duct tape and developer sweat.
And looking at how meticulously developers are engineering this emotional scaffolding raises a fascinating implication for the future, I think.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Well, right now, we are training these AI voices by painting scenes that mimic human emotional states. Mm-hmm. We tell them to suppress anger or to take a deep breath. We are forcing them to replicate our physical reality.
Right. We are using our own human limitations as the blueprint for the AI.
Exactly. But what happens when we remove that blueprint? What happens when developers begin prompting the AI to synthesize complex, contradictory emotions that a human physical body cannot easily vocalize?
Like prompting an emotion we don't even have a word for.
Exactly. Imagine prompting an AI to speak with the quiet dread of a fading memory, simultaneously mixed with the frantic, accelerating joy of a sudden, world-changing discovery.
Oh, wow.
A human actor might completely freeze, unable to figure out how to physically arrange their vocal cords to perform that contradiction.
Right.
But a neural network isn't constrained by human lungs or vocal cords. It might just calculate the required audio frequencies, blend the acoustic markers, and output it perfectly.
That is wild.
As we master this technology, are we going to inevitably invent entirely new synthetic emotional expressions that we can recognize but could never physically reproduce ourselves?
Wow. We started with a monotone GPS simply telling you to turn left in 500 feet, and now we are talking about navigating completely uncharted synthetic emotional territory. That is definitely something for you to mull over.